happy in America.
Lots of new housing with more bays.
Lots of slamming in our face.
The tariff apartment.
Better get rid of your accent.
Life can be bright in America.
It can be bright in America.
You know, I wasn't going to say this at all, but I can't help it. There you go again.
Well, yes, here we go again on WWPR 1490 AM with the relaunch of the Henry Raines Show. Many of you unexpectedly might have found this on the dial today, and many of you might have seen the Facebook post or the Twitter post of it being on the air. Returning after a long hiatus to WWPR 1490 AM, and next week I'll be joined in the studio with a longtime co-host and friend, here, Alan Cross. Many of you will remember them. Well, who is Henry Raines and who is this show? Well, it goes back to 2003 with the Bud Beck Show that launched prior to the invasion of Iraq. Got involved with that show, executive produced it, and then when he left for other areas, I took over and launched a show called American AM. Some of you might remember that with Sarasota Dave and a number of other individuals that were important and helpful on that. CJ Zaya, Jim Delgado, Alan Cross, of course, and many others. Went on to News Talk 820 for a while on the weekends and returned to WWPR, and then went into another endeavor for about 3-4 years now, and I'm back on the air, and I hope to reacquaint you with myself and an online audience also. I thought we would be talking today about a number of things, and the intro is not going to be a regular theme, and I thought, why have a regular theme? Why not have a theme that we open the segments with that are relevant to what we're going to talk about today? Well, if we're just talking about the events this week, we could be talking about Trump Care or Ryan Care or McConnell Care or whatever you want to call it, maybe the Unaffordable Care Act that's going through Congress right now, and that would be plenty to talk about. We could talk about WikiLeaks and the CIA surveillance and the revelations, if you didn't already know that your phone can be turned on, you can be listened to, many of the smart TVs can watch you and listen to you, and if you already read 1984 recently, decades ago like I did, before any of this technology was available, that could be pretty disturbing to you. But we could also talk about the travel ban, the new incarnation of the travel ban. And that would be very relevant today because in just a few moments, we're going to talk with a couple of individuals, two ladies from hometown of Rutland, Vermont, one still up there, one up, been up there, been down here, been up there, actually an early helper, asset, friend to the radio shows here at WWPR. Elsie Gilmore was the original webmaster and helped launch us, get started online way back in 2004, and we'll catch up with her also about what's going on in Vermont, and also we're talking with Cheryl Hooker, who is actually a host of a Syrian refugee family out there. If you had not heard the national news today, Rutland, Vermont became the center of attention because the incumbent mayor there was defeated, and many thought the primary reason was because of the plan to relocate Syrian refugees. Yeah, those refugees. And you're probably rolling your eyes. Some of you are going, oh, really? Vermont? Well, we're going to find out all about that in just a moment. We have a news report queued up here in just a second. But I do want to alert you that in the second half hour, we're going to be speaking with Mitch Perry Mitch Perry is a longtime Tampa Bay reporter. I joked last night with him. He's almost an old man of Tampa Bay journalism, although he's not an old man. With his extended career here in Tampa Bay, he's going to update us on what's going on in Florida politics with the new legislature session starting. The Governor Rick Scott, Speaker of the House Richard Corcoran feud, and much more on that. That'll be in the second half hour of the show. He writes for FloridaPolitics.com, StPetersBlog.com, formerly news and politics editor of Creative Loafing of Tampa Bay. He's former assistant news director over at WMNF 88.5. But let us get you back up to date with what's going on in Rutland, Vermont. And we will get Elsie Gilmore and Cheryl Hooker on the phone when we come back. You're listening to The Henry Rain Show.
Refugees has proven to be a divisive subject across the country, including in Rutland, Vermont. It's a city of 16,000, which this year became home to a handful of Syrian refugees. And as Vermont Public Radio's Nina Keck reports, the refugee question may have just cost the mayor his job.
Last April, Rutland Mayor Christopher Lewis surprised me when he announced that he wanted Rutland to become Vermont's newest refugee resettlement community. It was the right thing to do, said Lewis, who believed welcoming Syrian families would provide much-needed youth and diversity to Rutland. But many locals weren't convinced, believing the mayor negotiated the plan in secret without voter input. Many pledged to oust Lewis in the next election. That election came yesterday, and challenger David Allaire's message of trust and transparency resonated. A longtime member of the city's Board of Aldermen, he turned anger over resettlement into a stunning political upset.
I have no issues with refugees themselves. What I have an issue is with the process and with the refugee resettlement organization and their lack of information and transparency right up to this very moment.
Allaire says that if resettlement is to go forward, it'll have to be done in a different manner. He didn't elaborate, and to be clear, city officials don't have much of a say in refugee settlement, an issue handled at the federal level. At the polls Tuesday, Jillian Kellogg cited refugees as one of the deciding factors in her vote for Allaire.
It's not that refugees shouldn't have someplace safe to go if they need to get away from a bad situation, but they need to be properly vetted in order for them to come and for us to open up our city to them.
The current vetting process is intensive and typically takes about 2 years. President Trump signed an executive order promising even more stringent vetting. Outgoing Mayor Christopher Lewis says he'd hoped the election would be about things like repairing the city's aging infrastructure or figuring out how best to attract jobs, things city leaders can really have a hand in. But he says Rutland is a microcosm of a broader dialogue that's going on about refugees and immigrants, and he has no regrets about his stance.
If refugee resettlement cost me my job, so be it. I'm proud of that. If that's what cost me my job, bringing those 9 people here, bringing those 5 children here to rebuild their lives, good. That's fine.
Rutland was supposed to take in 100 Syrian refugees this year. Only 2 families have arrived, and whether more will come is unclear. For NPR News, I'm Nina Keck.
Well, there we go again with that audio. Had a little bit of trouble with the phone lines there, getting reacquainted here in the studio, but I do have our guests on the line. I'm going to alert them that both their phones are live right now as we bring this up. And first of all, I'd like to introduce Elsie Gilmore. Elsie, can you hear me okay?
I can, Henry. It's so nice to be on your show.
Thank you. And I was telling the audience before I got you on the air that actually the connection goes back before the 2004 show that Sarasota Dave and I started. And also, we first met, and you probably don't even remember this, is at his house for an event that a group called, that had just started up, called MoveOn.org, was asking people to hold house parties. And I think that was the first time we, either of us, had ever met, or you had ever met Sarasota Dave. And do you recall that?
I do not. I have no recollection of that whatsoever, but I believe you because there are a lot of things in life I don't remember.
Yes. And so whatever happened to that MoveOn.org group?
I hardly ever hear about them anymore. Yes, I do all the time.
Yeah, and also on the line we have Cheryl Hooker, who I believe is speaking to us from Rutland, Vermont. Is that correct, Cheryl?
It is, Senator.
And is my audio coming over your phone okay?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Well, I'm going to introduce the audience more to you in just a moment, Cheryl, but let me start with Elsie because this came to my attention because of a post on Facebook, and let me put a quick aside to the audience. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Henry Raines Show. Message us. I'll be trying to keep track of that in the studio. I'll probably be better at that as the weeks go on. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/HenryRaines Show. And so Elsie put up this post about her recollections of her hometown of Rutland, Vermont. And then I heard this on the national news on NPR, actually a report I just play. So, Elsie, tell us a little bit about Rutland, Vermont, your connection, and why you thought this was important to post on Facebook.
Yeah, so I grew up on a small dairy farm in Vermont, but I spent my 20s in the local city of Rutland, Vermont, which is in Rutland County. And Rutland County is a very blue-collar county. When manufacturing was big in the U.S., Rutland was booming. It had a lot of manufacturing, and as you know, manufacturing jobs are good jobs. They're good paying, they have pensions, benefits, and often you belong to a union. So Rutland was very strong at that time, but as with many cities across the country, when the manufacturing left, the town really stagnated. So now Rutland County has a lot of tourism jobs, and tourism jobs are service jobs, and they don't pay great, and they aren't always full-time, and they don't always have benefits. So the economy in my county, because of that, has really stagnated since the 70s.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's just a little bit about Rutland itself.
And that resulted in was there a population drop or negative growth, or was there something that was concerning about labor shortage?
Yeah. So the state of Vermont did a report called, it was about population projections for 2010 to 2030 in Vermont, and it split it up by county, and they did two scenarios, like if this happens, this will be the result, and if this happens, this will be the result. So these projections came out in 2013, and for scenario A, Rutland County would lose 5.2% of its population. There would be an explosion in people aged 70 and over, and there would be a large shrinking of people 29 and under and between 45 and 59. So in scenario B, Rutland County would lose 12.1% of its population with the same, you know, distinctions in population groups. People 70 and older, there would be many more of them. So the population was going to shrink no matter what, and it was going to get old, and that is very bad news, as you can imagine. So when I saw this report, I was living there at the time, and I actually said to a few people these exact words: if I was mayor of Rutland, Vermont, I would do everything in my power to make sure these predictions do not become true.
And by the way, just as an aside, I believe you're speaking to us from St. Petersburg, so you know what it means to have an aging demographic population.
Well, I think St. Pete's population is getting younger. So, you know, over the years, this used to be called God's waiting room, but the population of St. Pete is actually very young right now. So I think Sarasota is probably much older than
okay.
St. Pete at this point.
And let's bring Cheryl into this. So, Cheryl, I take it you'd probably follow along with Elsie's thoughts on that?
I do. I grew up in Rutland. I've lived here all of my life, and I remember as a young person saying that the population of Rutland City was 20,000 people, and now it's fewer than 17,000. So we have lost significant population. And I think Elsie is very wise to say that the mayor should focus on making sure that the prediction of losing even more people from the city and even in the county does not come true.
Now, Cheryl, were you politically active locally? Did this just become your issue, or were you already involved in other civic activities there?
I served on the Board of Aldermen for 3 years. I served in the House of Representatives and in the State Senate 8 years, and a combination of the two. And I've stayed politically active. That's how I met Elsie, through the Rutland County Democrats. So I'm still
involved in the party, but I am no longer holding an office. So I guess I was kind of prone to wanting to be involved, and that's how I got involved in this latest project issue, and certainly want to stay involved in helping our city revitalize.
So it wasn't theoretical to you because you'd had your hands involved in the nuts and bolts of administering at the city level, and also you had dealt with the state issue levels. So how was the problem addressed in Rutland by the previous mayor, and how did he get started?
Well, the project or the issue that came to light in August was the mayor's attempt to make Rutland a resettlement area for refugees. And he saw it not only as a humanitarian effort, but as an effort to bring people into the city and to help grow the population. His intent was to see 100 refugees over the next year coming from Syria and or Iraq and settle in the city. So he invited me and my husband to go to a press conference that he was having at City Hall to announce this, and we thought, you know, this is a way that we can tangibly help people who are fleeing from horrific life circumstances and help them and help our own community at the same time.
So how did it actually work? I mean, you don't just say, oh, I hope some Syrian refugees roll into town.
Well, it was a real process, and the mayor had spoken with people from Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program and at the federal level at the refugee program there to see whether or not Rutland would be compatible as a refugee resettlement area, and it was eventually, we were eventually designated a resettlement area with the idea that, yes, we had some opportunities for work here in the city. The mayor worked with many business leaders, with healthcare leaders to make sure that we could accommodate an influx of people with our healthcare system and certainly with the school system because obviously there would be children involved and would be coming into their city schools. So he had worked with those people for several months before this came to the public's attention.
So why refugees? I mean, there's immigrant populations already resident in the United States. Why Syrian refugees in particular? And what kind of reaction did the town folk have?
I think Syrian refugees in particular because of the high profile of the Syrian situation, the civil war over in Syria. And that was one place where people are fleeing in droves, looking for places to go. And I'm not exactly sure why they were the ones chosen for our area, but it seems to me that because Syria is in the news all the time, you know, there are ordinary people who are trying to get out of that situation and to start new lives. As far as how it was accepted or reacted to by the community, there was some question about the way the mayor went about this. People thought that it was not transparent enough.
Sure, let me just stop you for a second because I might have missed something and you might have said it and I just missed it. But
mm-hmm.
Why was the general refugee population the first target? Before we get to the Syria part.
Yeah. Harry, if I go ahead, so I did read this morning in one of the many articles that have been written about it, that one reason that Mayor Loras chose Syrian refugees is that several state governors had recently said that they would not accept any Syrian refugees. And so I think his decision to seek out Syrian refugees may have been in response to that.
So let me recap. There was this impending aging demographic growing. There was a shortage of the workforce, at least for the jobs that might be available there. And then it was said we can help refugees and help ourselves?
Yeah. I think so. I think that's accurate. I don't know that the demographic and the shortage of labor was the primary concern. I really think it was a humanitarian concern first and foremost.
Does the city have a history of doing things like that?
Rutland does, I'm happy to say. We are an area of immigrants. And the Irish, the French, the Italian, the Polish, you know, we all came from different parts, primarily of Europe, but we all came to this area. I know that my own grandparents on both sides came from Italy, and so we've always been an accepting community. And we've done amazing things in a lot of other areas. For a small community, we've done amazing things. Rutland is a very caring place.
I agree.
So you've set the table for us. So, but there was the election, and now the incumbent mayor is gone, the new mayor is in. What's the status of the refugee program?
Well, the refugee program is kind of in limbo right now, not so much with the local issue, but with the national issue. So we're waiting to find out what's going on with the second ban, and whether or not we will be able to get more Syrian and Iraqi refugees.
So how many individuals actually made it to Rutland?
Only two families. There's one family with two children and one family with three children. So there are only a total of nine Syrian refugees who are here.
Four adults and then five children?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think I also saw that with the new travel ban, that the refugees that have already gotten their visa may be allowed to come. Is that correct?
I think that is the case right now. And you know, these people go through a really strenuous process, and it can take years for them to get.
And let me just let the audience know, because I've sort of slowed those down, and we needed to move faster than I moved it along. I should say that Cheryl Hooker and welcomed one of these two families into her home for, I believe, 10 days as they resettled and has had an ongoing relationship with them. Jump ahead and tell us what it was like the first time you heard that they were going to be coming, your thoughts about getting ready, and what it was like to meet them.
My husband and I got involved initially after a group of teachers and others started a group called Rutland Welcomes. And they were looking for volunteers to help with this resettlement because we expected 100 people to be coming. And so we got involved in the new home setup committee, which meant that we would help to collect furniture and household goods. And then as soon as we found out that a family was coming, we would go in and set up an apartment that local landlords were willing to make available to these families. That we had a wonderful drive. People came out from all over the place and brought tons of goods. We have them in storage now. And then one Sunday night, George and I got a call from the Vermont Refugee Resettlement Program asking if we would temporarily host one of the first families that was coming. This was the Sunday before inauguration. The families arrived on that Thursday night, and then the inauguration was on Friday. We met the families for the first time when they arrived in Rutland from New York, having traveled for hours and hours from Turkey, and took them into our house. We had the family with the three children. The oldest one is 6, and the little boy is 4, and the baby is a year and a half. And they were great to have as house guests. They were very helpful, wanted to help in any way that they could. And, of course, the language barrier because my Arabic is certainly a lot less advanced than their English, but it was still difficult to communicate. But we managed with a lot of sign language and apps on our cell phones for translating from English to Arabic and Arabic to English. But these people are fleeing the same people that our own government is trying to help fight against. So it felt like we were really helping friends to resettle and to make a better life for themselves. I know that Ahmed, our father, the father of the family that stayed with us, said that, you know, in Syria he was a wealthy man, but he's lost everything now, and the only thing that mattered to him, he said, was to make sure that his family was safe.
So with the little bit of time that we have left, and we had planned on, I should tell the audience that Cheryl was at the Women's March in Washington after the inauguration, and Elsie participated in the huge march that was up in Pinellas County at the same day, but I don't think we're going to get a chance to get to that because we're running a little behind as we are. So Cheryl, and then I'll give Elsie a chance to follow you. What do you want to leave the audience with? What do you think is the most important takeaway that people that listen through this should hold on to?
Well, you know that, you know, our community was sort of divided, certainly on the way that this whole process was rolled out. But I think that we've kind of come together now to help the people that we can help. I wish that I could say that we could make things better in their home countries so that we could all live where we were planted, I guess. But we can't. And so if there's something that we can do to help these people, I think that it's imperative that we do it.
Is the new mayor going to follow through on the program, or has he taken an opposing stance to it?
The new mayor, the mayor-elect has said that he's not opposed to refugees. He was opposed to the way the program was presented. So my hope is that Rutland will still be an accepting community for any of the refugees who are scheduled to come here or who will come here in the future.
Okay. Elsie, what would you like to leave the audience with?
Okay, so just to appease my Rutland friends who will probably yell at me if I don't, there was at least one other controversial issue during the election, during the mayoral election. So I'm not saying that the entire reason that Laura's lost was because of the refugees, but I do think it was a big reason, but it wasn't the only controversy at the time. And the other thing is that, as Cheryl said, the people in my hometown are amazing. They're kind and they're generous. And even the ones who joined the Rutland First group, which, you know, they wanted to focus on taking care of people in Rutland first, even those people are good people. You know, there's a lot of fear and a lot of unknowns. And I totally understand that, especially living in a really small town. So I totally get that, but in their hearts, I believe that the people of my hometown are all kind, generous, amazing people, and I know that in the end, they'll always do the right thing.
All right. Well, thank you very much for wrapping that up. I hope maybe sometime we'll be able to get an update on this as the issues evolve. I know I'd love to also speak with both of you about how the women's issues and women's concerns are taking a lot of forefront in the activism that we're seeing around the country now. But Cheryl, Elsie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Henry.
All right, well, I want to thank both Cheryl Hooker, Elsie Gilmore, and I also want to let you know that this show will be posted in two parts at Podomatic.com, HenryRainShow.Podomatic.com, and of course, we'll circulate it through Facebook and Twitter and other means, too. Coming up on the other side in the second half of the show, Mitch Perry of FloridaPolitics.com.
was a merchant ship. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the end of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery.
You probably know the Secret Service is renting 2 floors of Trump Tower at a cost of nearly $3 million. Now, a lot of people are saying this is a tremendous waste of taxpayer money. See, this is why I am not a taxpayer. But I learned that I'm going to have to...